Commitment to Excellence podcast. We're here to help you make a commitment to excellence, to be the best that you can possibly be in whatever it is you want to be, everything that you want to be. And we're going to bring you insights, research, experience, stories, and just hopefully general common sense to help you be the best that you can be in any and every aspect of life. Thanks for being here. This is episode 2 of the Commitment to Excellence podcast. Those of you who listened to the first time, thanks for coming back. And for anybody new, we're glad to have you here. Check out episode 1. Kind of gives you a little introduction into who we are and why we're here. So today's episode is called Do Everything with Purpose on Purpose. What does that mean? I think it can mean different things to different people. But to me, it means if it's important to you, do it deliberately. Do it intentionally. There's no other way to do it. The only way you're going to achieve excellence, achieve the outcomes that you want to achieve, is to do it very intentionally. So I like to say, do everything with purpose, on purpose. And this has been again, for me, personal journey. And again, that's what this podcast is largely about. My journey that I want to share with you in hopes of speeding up your learning curve so that you don't have to suffer some of the long-term consequences of poor decisions and inaction and just kind of not going through life with purpose. So that's what I want to help you out here with. I first really got turned on to this way of thinking. I'm not sure how long ago it was, but when I got done grad school, and to be fair, I can probably count on one hand the number of books that I read in high school. I know I can. I read one book when I was in high school. I'm not proud of that. I'm not bragging about it. It is what it is. I did not like to read. It was a real chore that I did not enjoy. And I definitely did not change my philosophy on that in college. And you could argue my grades might have reflected that. And then in grad school, I had to read a little bit more to get by. And some of what I read was interesting, some of it was not. But when I got done grad school, I swore I was never going to read again. And I've become an aggressive reader in recent years, and I'm for sure a better everything because of it. I would argue I've discovered a real passion for learning, and now I think an emerging passion for teaching, which is what we're doing here. So one of the first books I read, at first I started reading research papers because people were talking about things, professionals that I look up to were talking about research, and I figured I better know some of it. So I started reading articles first, but then I sort of dove into books. And the first one that really caught my attention was a book called Bounce that was written by Matthew Syed. It was published in 2010. And that book, as it turns out, was about a breakdown of research on top performers it's been a while since I've read it, but elite ping pong players and violin players and athletes and you name it. I remember thinking, like, people research violin players and people have researched a soccer player. Like, why would people do that? People want to understand, like, what makes good people good, what makes great people great, what's the difference between a top, like, 1% elite performer and just sort of an average performer in any given field, looking for commonalities of what makes people different. Maybe there's some things that we can tap into here to improve performance and outcomes. And you come to find out there's pr- pretty significant research on similar things in the world of therapists. What's the difference between a not very good therapist, a really good therapist, and so on. And, you know, anybody that wants to be the best in their field probably should tune in to that kind of research and look into it. So I first read Bounce, but it turns out that wasn't the first book that was published on the subject matter. Outliers was published in 2008 by Malcolm. That's a book by Malcolm Gladwell that's much more widely known. I didn't look up the numbers, but I'm sure it sold a lot more copies than Bounce. But Bounce was my first read. It's what turned me on to this way of thinking. And Outliers sort of popularized the 10,000 hour rule. If you've heard of it, then you probably know what it is. But if you haven't heard of it, I'm going to give you a very simple definition of the 10,000 hour rule. So basically it says that if you want to be really good at something, you need to spend 10,000 or more hours doing it to be great at it. So you break that down, there's a lot of time there invested in that, a lot of weeks. It's about 250 weeks of constant, consistent, like 40 hours a week, not deliberate, but work or reps. I like to talk a lot about reps, putting the reps in, 10,000 hours to be really, really good. Malcolm Gladwell sort of popularized that notion and really kind of took it to the next level. That's a great book. Outliers, great book. I highly recommend it. Maybe someday we'll do a deeper dive into it. But I think for the purposes of this conversation, just a general overview is probably good. But it turns out that both of those books were really kind of generated from research that was started by a psychologist and his team named Anders Ericsson. And he wrote a book in 2016 that I would argue is probably in response, and if memory serves me, even mentions in the book somewhere that it's in response to Malcolm Gladwell's talk and popularization of the 10,000 hour rule. The 10,000 hour rule is a good start, basically, is what Anders said and what his research says. That, yeah, you need to put 10,000 hours in to be good at something, but there's a difference between being good at it and being great, being elite, being a top performer. So I could go out and play 10,000 hours of golf, and probably at the end of that, I'm going to be at least an okay golfer, probably, if I survive the 10,000 hours. But that's not going to make me Tiger Woods in his prime. So what is it? Same thing with basketball. I could play 10,000 hours of basketball. Michael Jordan, I will not be. So there's a genetics and natural athletic ability when it comes to these sorts of things. But what is it that makes them different? There's a really cool study about violin players and the difference between teachers, like people who go on to become music teachers, and people who play in orchestras as part of larger ensembles and, you know, maybe make some portion of their living, and then people who go on to be like soloists and really high level elite, like top tier violin players. And one of the things that separates them, probably the most important thing that separates them, is hours. You know, the music teachers came in somewhere. Again, I'm not pulling this right from the book, so don't quote me on this, but somewhere around like 6,000 or 7,000 hours of practice time. And then the higher performers, orchestra musicians, were in the like 8,000 to 9,000 hour range. The elite performers were in the like 10,000 to 12,000 hour range. And it was mostly as the parent of a child, these folks are more self-driven than anything. And I think that's something that I and, you know, we need to keep in mind, that forcing or bribing or creatively encouraging kids to do so, like, it's got to sort of come from inside for these top tier people. I believe there's a lot of things that we can do to create and provide opportunities. But if you are cramming things down, you know, if you have a kid that wants to play soccer instead of softball, and you force the softball on them because that's what you like instead, you're probably going to end up having a kid that hates softball. So what you need to do is provide opportunities for whatever they're interested in and let them find their own drive. But the reality is that the top performers, your Beethovens and these sorts of people, they're all pretty self-driven. They did all this stuff on their own. And again, they may have had opportunities and resources, and, you know, you send your kids to camp and give them the resources, but they've got to want it. But it boils down to reps over time. But it's more than that. It's reps for perfection. It's reps to perform. It's breaking down the parts of what you do to the tiniest, most microscopic level. And that starts with, you know, when I was in high school and played football, we'd play our games on Friday night or, you know, Saturday afternoon or whatever. And Sunday morning, we'd be back at the high school. The coaches would be there, and the guys on the team could show up and watch film with the coaches, and they'd break it down. And if we were there, and you should have been there, if we were there, the coaches would break down and critique our play during the film and walk stuff back. We'd get very specific feedback. And that got much more intense as I went to college. Again, I mentioned last time I played football for a couple of years in college. Not only were the games filmed, but every practice session was filmed. Every rep that we had in practice was filmed. And we watched it back. After each day, we'd spend almost as much time in meetings watching film, going over technique and concepts and getting feedback. And it wasn't always nice feedback, but it was feedback, getting feedback on our performance. And then we go back out and do it again and try to do it better. And that continues on. I am sure that NFL players spend even more time doing that. Right, that is how you become elite. You put the time in, and then you take it to the next level. You break things down to a microscopic level. Tiger Woods hires a coach to work on his drives or his putting or whatever is not completely dialed in and refined. He goes out, he finds an expert to help him dial it in and refine it. That is deliberate practice. So it's practice is just getting the reps, right? But deliberate practice is breaking little skills down at the tiniest level and doing them over and over and over again. And the feedback part is probably the most important part. And it's maybe one of the most neglected parts of all this. Because, well, I mean, it's hard to ask for feedback. It's hard to give feedback well. And, you know, nobody wants, or very few people want, constructive criticism. It is a difficult thing to sit in a meeting with, a bunch of 22-year-old men and have the coach spend 20 minutes raking you over the coals in front of everybody. But if you are able to develop the internal fortitude to handle that, and maybe even better, is embrace the process, embrace the feedback, ask for it, go get it, seek it out, find a coach. That's how you're going to grow the most. Then you put the time in, then you put the reps in, you keep getting after it, you keep grinding, you get better and you're better and better and better. And that applies to every single thing in our lives. It's not just baseball. It's not just football or basketball or playing the violin. It's being a good person. It's being a good husband, being a good wife, being a good friend. Everything that is important and has meaning to you. If you want to be excellent at it, that is the approach that you have to take. And that's not just my personal experience or my personal opinion. There's tons of research out there. And some of this stuff is hard to research, but you can break it down and talk to people and ask them. And I love listening to Michael Jordan talk and Kobe Bryant talk about how they outworked everybody and how tenacious they were and how they got to the gym before everybody else and they left after everybody else. And, you know, Michael Jordan has said repeatedly that he practiced much harder than he ever had to play in a game, so the game was just kind of going through the motions for him. That is not the approach that most people take to their daily lives, to their daily choices, activities, relationships, what have you. Most people don't do that. We're kind of on cruise control for most of the things that we do. And that's fine if that's who you want to be, if that's what you want to be, if you're just kind of punching the clock at work, if you're just punching the clock with your relationships, that's great. But you really need to be more deliberate about it if you want to be the best at whatever it is that you choose to undertake. And I know, you know, I mean, I'm far from perfect. I'm not the best at anything. And I'm not sure I'm ever going to be, but like I said in the last podcast, I want to be a great podcaster. I am guessing that, you know, I'm not that good yet. There's probably lots of pauses and ums and ahs. And I know the first episode, I spent more time editing it than it took me to record it, cutting out most of the ums and the ahs and the stumbles and stammers. And so far, knock on wood, this one's going a little bit better, so probably I'll have to edit a little bit less. But still, nonetheless, it's a work in progress. The way I will get better at this is to put the time in, put the reps in, keep posting podcasts, get some feedback. And I got, much to my surprise, I got a ton of feedback about the first episode. All positive so far, which is nice, but probably... that's probably all I need right now, right? Not that I'm a child playing baseball or what have you, or picking up a violin for the first time. I'm not sure that super critical feedback is great for a beginner. And maybe there's even research to back that up, but this is really just sort of my opinion at this point. Beginners need a lot more positive reinforcement to get through that, because things are harder in the beginning, right? Like, pick up a guitar to play for the first time, you have no idea what you're doing. Same thing with throwing a football or hitting a baseball. You don't know what you're doing. So me telling you that your swing is garbage when you're 7 years old, swinging a bat for the first time, giving you super critical feedback is probably not the right way to go. But focusing on, hey, great swing, nice job, keep your eye on the ball, like, let's keep going, let's get the reps. Really good job, little Johnny, like, you're working really hard, I can see you really like this, you really want to hit that ball, let's keep going. That's, you know, a beginner probably needs more positive feedback. So that's all I got so far, and that's great. I'm a grown-up, so I'll eventually be able to handle positive feedback, or constructive feedback. Let's take our time on that. And, you know, then I'm going to have to decide who I want to take critical feedback from, right? If 1,000 people that I don't know send me emails and tell me I suck, there's a chance I'm not going to want to keep doing this anymore. But if my buddy Chris, who's been one of my best friends since I was a kid, sends me an email and he's like, hey man, you did this and I'm not sure that worked, or I'm not sure that made a lot of sense, and I really think that you might want to consider doing this. Well, I'm going to pay attention to that. Why? Because I know that he cares about me and he's been there for me through thick and thin for years, right? But if someone I don't know gives me, and you know, that doesn't mean there's not some value in that, because someone I don't know isn't influenced by any pre-existing relationships and that kind of thing. So, but you have to have a filter there. What you really need is to find people that actually know what they're talking about. So when it comes to podcasting, other people who have been podcasting, you know, hey, so-and-so, any chance you could listen to an episode sometimes? Or, you know, maybe I'm going to have a guest on someday and I can have them listen to an episode. But like people who know what they're doing, that's the kind of feedback that you want in every field, right? Like Tiger Woods never came to me and asked me to coach him on his golf swing. And he's probably not going to. My daughter is, in my opinion, I'm biased, obviously, is a very good softball player. And I've coached her and continue to sort of help out a little bit. There will come a day when she is beyond what I have to offer her. She's a pitcher. My wife was a pitcher in high school. But we saw very early on two things. One, she progressed past what we could offer her very, very quickly. And two, she didn't want to listen to us. So we found her a coach, and the coach says some of the exact same things to her that my wife was doing, because, you know, like I said, my wife was a pretty good pitcher in high school, but that was kind of the end of it for her. So we found her a gal who was an all-star and pitched through 4 years of college and has worked with other pitchers and really, really knows what she's doing. She could tell her almost anything and she'd listen to her. That's what a good coach does. And that's the kind of feedback that you need to grow. And sometimes it has to come from somebody who you don't live with, somebody who doesn't love you necessarily. Hopefully it's someone that cares about you. That's what you need. You need feedback. That's how you grow. There's some really cool and interesting research on therapists in particular, which is interesting to me because, well, that's kind of my full-time gig at this point in time. And, you know, I want to be good at that. Interestingly enough, I'll say this little sidebar. Clinicians are some of the most narcissistic people on the face of the planet. And I'm not sure that I'm any exception to that. But there's some amazing research on effective therapists, and particularly this, where I'm going with this, is on cognitive biases and how therapists link or rate themselves as compared to their peers. So there's really cool study or paper that was written by Walfish and colleagues. The findings of the studies, some of them are that are most interesting when asked to rate themselves as compared to other clinicians. All clinicians rated themselves as better than average, or almost all clinicians. 80, on average, they viewed their skills to be better than 80% of their peers. I think 90%, I think I'm getting the numbers right, 90%, 80% of therapists rank themselves as being better than 90% of their peers. So that we think we're all in the top 10% of our field. Interestingly enough, the research on that would seem to suggest that the therapists who rate themselves the most poor as compared to their peers are actually the better therapist in terms of outcomes, right? And that means, what's an outcome with therapy? That clients are happy, they report reduced symptoms, there's a successful ending to the therapeutic relationship, that kind of thing. It's interesting. And basically, the best therapists, the very best therapists, are the therapists who ask their clients for feedback. So tell me how that went today. Tell me, you know, what worked. I really want you to tell me what could have been better. And they need to know that you mean it, that you're not just going through the motions. The therapists who take that approach to their work and bring that to the table are the therapists who have the best outcomes in these studies. So there's a whole sort of field of practice is called feedback informed treatment, which basically it formalizes a way of like checking in with your clients every week, and then kind of they give you a score of like how they're doing, and then at the end of the session you ask them for feedback. How'd it go? What could have gone better? There's some specific formal questions. That's how you get the best outcomes, and the clients that engage in that process report that they love it. I've encountered some resistance to the process formal way. So the way it's sort of prescribed is that you actually have a form that the client fills out at the beginning of the session, and then again at the end of the session, and there's a conversation that sort of goes along with it. I've experienced some, and maybe it's my fault, perhaps it's a flaw in my implementation, but I've experienced some resistance to the formalization of that process. Like, people just don't seem to love the filling out the forms, at least not for this purpose anyway. But where I have had better results is just informally, you know, having a conversation. But again, the concern with that is that maybe you're more likely to get honest feedback and criticism in writing as opposed to having to look the other person in the eye. It's, you know, it's a hard thing to do, to look someone in the eye and give them feedback and tell them, you know, I didn't like that, or that didn't go the way that I wanted it to go. It takes a pretty strong together person. It takes a confident person to be able to do that. It takes a level of trust to be able to do that. That takes time. You know, not everybody that comes to a therapeutic relationship is able to do that. Anyway, long story, but back on track, is that is why we need the feedback. It's how we get better. In the case of the therapeutic relationship, it's how we both get better. But in the terms of being a great athlete, being a great business person, being great in your relationship with your partner, it requires a level of the feedback is super important. How are we going to adjust together as we move forward here? So it's reps, and you know, the biggest part of the pod, if you will, is it's reps, and it's reps over time. But it's more than that. It's deliberate practice. It's breaking down very specific skills. So if I'm really good at fielding ground balls, well, I don't need to spend a lot of time on that. But if I can't bunt to save my life, I need to be laying down bunts every day. Reps, but very specific, deliberate practice. Breaking down film, getting feedback, bringing in coaches, being very, very deliberate about your practice. That is the way to personal excellence. And again, you have to decide, how far do I want to take that? Do I want to be a local power lifter? Do I want to be a state champion power lifter? Do I want to be a national champion powerlifter? Do I want to be a world champion powerlifter? What's your answer to that question? Your answer to that question will define how you need to come at this. Same thing with softball. Do I want to be okay softball player? Do I want to play in high school? Do I want to play D3 in college? What do I want to do? Do I want to play on the Olympics? What do I want to do? My answer to that question is going to define the course of action that I need to take. I want to have a high-level relationship with my wife. I need to put the time in. I need to put the reps in. I need to pay attention. I need to give her feedback. She needs to give me feedback. We need to implement. That is how we do things. We do things deliberately. We're doing, you know, we do date nights, or we don't actually do a lot of date nights. We spend weekends at softball tournaments and Friday nights at soccer games with friends and family. And this is what I think, anyway, based on our conversations, this is what we enjoy doing together and spending time together. There will come a time when the kids are grown up and gone and doing their whole thing. You know, we'll do some things differently. But for the time being, we're not. What keeps our relationship kind of plugging along, as far as I'm concerned, is not, you know, fancy dinners out and that kind of thing. It's getting a coffee on the way to the Friday night soccer game, spending the weekend at the softball tournament, getting some lunch and spending a little time. Like, that's what makes us happy. But for you, maybe it's something different. It's really important that all of the things in life that are important to you, your career, your relationships, your family, your friends, and you got to prioritize stuff, right? You cannot be a high-level performer at every single thing. It is really hard to do, to be great at more than a couple of things at any one time. So you have to prioritize and you have to decide which of these things am I going to focus on right now? And something else has to give a little bit, and that's fine. You know, right now I'm focusing on this, the podcast thing. I'm really invested in this. So there are other things that are going to give, and I have decided that that's okay. So I'm going to be very deliberate about my time and about my approach to this, and we'll see where it goes. But other things are going to have to give, and that, you know, that's okay, but you have to prioritize, and then you got to put it into play. So it's all about the reps over time, and then it's about breaking things down and refining skills, objectives to their smallest, most important level, whatever that may be. Whatever you're doing, it's going to be different. Business, it'll be different than softball, right? So, and then it's about feedback and incorporating that feedback, but not just random feedback, deliberate feedback from intelligent, resourceful people, leaders in the field, coaches, that kind of thing. And these are all things that I planned to talk more about as we go on. I really thought it was important to talk about this early in the podcast evolution, because this, you know, for me, this, what I call the deliberate practice, research, and associated mindset is the foundation for everything. Do everything with purpose, on purpose. Engage in very deliberate practice with as many things as you can every single day. And that, it's hard. It is difficult to do that, especially with more than one thing at a time. But if you want to be the best that you can be, that's what you need to do. And it requires time management and support and resources and massive amounts of attention and sort of priming the pump, like making sure it depended on what it is that you're working on. If it's a physical sort of thing, it's you need to be getting enough sleep. You need to be eating healthy. That's my anchor that drags me down all the time. But sleep is super important. If you're not getting enough sleep at night, you need it. All of these things are things that I want to talk about as we go on, and goal setting and associated things, but I really didn't feel like I could move forward with the conversation that I, the conversations that I want to have without having this discussion first about deliberate practice, and just letting you know that there's some research out there. And if you want to follow up on this stuff, probably, you know, the best sort of like elementary read is the Outliers book by Malcolm Gladwell. And I think if I'm able to pull this off, I'm going to put links to these in show notes. So wherever you're listening, you should be able to find links to the books. Hopefully I'll be able to pull that off in the show notes. So Outliers is, if you haven't read that, I highly recommend it. But just keep in mind that it's coming up short. It's getting the reps part down. It's getting the time part down. But it doesn't really capture the, what I would call sort of like advanced deliberate practice with the minute kind of break, the minutia breakdown of the basic advanced skills and the feedback portion of this. It really kind of falls short in that area, I would argue, but it gets a lot of it right. And it's a good, easy read if you're ambitious and you want to kind of geek out a little bit on some nerdier stuff than Peak by Anders Ericsson is the better play. So check those out. Hopefully I will have the links in the show notes. And again, if you stuck around this long, thanks a bunch. I appreciate it. I am having fun doing this. I've been looking forward to recording this all week. I'm going to keep trying to drop these, what I'm going to call my longer episodes, on Monday mornings. And I think the first one dropped at 5, but I think they're going to drop at 4:30, because that's what time I get up every day. And frankly, it's what time I think most people should get up. So I think it's going to drop at 4:30 from now on Mondays. And I was looking forward to recording this all week. I'm also inserting some intro and outro music here. if I can pull that off. So I'm pretty excited about that, hoping to continue to improve the production quality of this and learn as I go. So there's going to be a lot of mistakes and trials and tribulations, obviously, but hope you like the music. If you don't, feel free to let me know. I was under the impression it was going to take weeks to get the podcast up on iTunes and Spotify and Google or Amazon, but it's up. It's up on iTunes. It's up on Amazon. It's up on Spotify. I went to Spotify very quickly, so that's cool. So I think you can get it where you're listening to your podcast now, just generally speaking. So I ask that, if you get anything out of this, give me a follow. Give me a review. My limited understanding of this is reviews kind of drive the algorithms. So give me a review, even if it's bad reviews. I think it's amount of reviews. I might be wrong about that, so maybe I'll do a take back on that. But give me a review. Give me some feedback if you know me on a personal level. And I was super pumped to see how many people gave me some feedback. Folks that I know, it was really cool and exciting to get the feedback. Keep it coming. And again, as we go, and I struggle, and I will, feel free to give me that constructive criticism, because it's how I will get better at this. So reps first, just over time. So, and then after that, we'll start breaking it down. We'll try to up our game with some fancier stuff. But for right now, the intro and outro music is probably going to do. So anyway, I'm having a good time with this. I hope you are too. I hope that you are thinking about ways that you can commit to excellence in your life and be the best that you can be. And again, I'll stop saying this. There's very little about me that's excellent, but I want everything about me to be excellent. And I hope you do too. All right, thanks for listening. Make today great.